Okay, today is March 3rd, the year 2000. I'm here in Delray, Florida, and I'm here with Ruth Epstein Greenstein, who came from Poland, although the border changed, so it was sometimes Russia, sometimes Poland, but we're going to say it's Poland now, and it was Poland when you were born. And that was in 1923 when Mrs. Greenstein was 15 years of age. At the time of this interview, how old are you now?
I'm 94. I'll be 92 in August.
Okay. 91 years of age. This is Janet Levine for the National Park Service. And I want to say that I'm glad I got to see you. We'll try to go quickly. Okay. Now, if you would say again for the tape, your birth date and where in Poland were you born?
I was born in Katusz Beresa. That's the name of this small town.
Do you have any idea how to spell it?
Katusz, K-A-R-T-U-Z, apostrophe, Beresa, V-E-R-E-Z-A.
Do you know where that is?
That's Grodno. The Grodno is the capital. I believe that Grodno must be the capital. Grodno, Gubernia. Gubernia is the capital. That's in Russian.
Okay. And did you live in the same place up until you left?
Yes. Never traveled any place.
Okay. How would you describe that place?
A small town where we used to walk barefooted and carry water from the well. I remember carrying water from the well because I was the oldest. And I had, during the time, I had two more sisters than we were four girls. The fourth one was born during the war, during the First World War.
Oh, okay. So you were the oldest one. What was your mother's name?
Reza. Are you Jewish?
I wasn't raised Jewish, but my father was Jewish.
Ah. Because Reza.
And your mother's maiden name?
My mother's maiden name is Rosenkrantz.
Rosenkrantz. And your father's name?
Chaim.
Chaim. And did you have grandparents who lived near you?
I never knew my grandmother, but my grandfather was killed during the war. A soldier, he was coming, walking to my house, and a soldier beat him up with the gun, with that, the end of the gun, the rifle, and he cut his beard. He tore the beard off, and he was screaming. And he was in the middle of the street coming, and I saw him from far, the way he was beating him, and I started to cry. And then he walked over, and then he got very sick, and a couple of days later, he died.
Mm. Wow.
That was for what we went through. The war was every time they were fighting, the Russian came in, the Poles went out, and the Poles was fighting, and every time they were in and out, another group of people, they burned the city. They used to throw sparks, whatever, and there were small homes. Some even had straw on the roof. And they burned the city, and there was a time when we ran from there. They told us to run because the Russians were coming, or the Poles were coming, and they were getting and changing. And all this time there was no food. And one time we had to leave, and until we reached, and it was raining on the way, and we had two horses. We didn't have it. A man that we paid was going to take us because my mother was pregnant, and it was getting cold already. It was in September. And we left our town. It was burning. My father remained home because he wanted to save something from what we owned there. And he and most of the men remained, and the women left. And it was getting, it was raining, and we were sitting in a small forest And the Germans came and took away the horses. Then the Germans came in too. The Germans were fighting too. They took away the horses. I don't know how we got. We got to some barn far away to a different town. And it was very, very bad for us because there was nothing to eat. And the whole, not the whole town, but all the people that left the city landed in that barn. So we were sleeping one or another. There was nobody to chill the children. And my mother was pregnant, and they thought she was going to give birth any day. And it was a terrible feeling until it quieted down a little. My father came this summer. We came back home. But the soldiers lived in my house, and there were no windows. All the windows were out from shooting, from throwing the bombs. All the windows were broken. So we stayed overnight in the neighbors. And then the next day, the soldiers left, and the house was ruined. They made a ruination there. So that how it was. That was my youth. My childhood. And then it got better a little. We fixed up somehow. The house was repaired. And we stayed there. And then when there was no food, things were bad. And my aunt sent me a passport to come to the United States with her sister and her sister's child. And her husband was of Russia. I told you that. Her husband stayed in Russia because they thought he was a spy, but he wasn't. He came there to buy some things for the store. They had a store that they sold kerosene, some different kind of cereals, whatever they were able to get to sell so they can earn a few dollars, a few pennies. It wasn't dollars. And until in 1923, I was already 15. I was 14, going up in 15. And I came to the United States, and I came by myself because my aunt didn't want to go because her husband came back. They let him out. They realized he's not a spy and that he can go. So he came home. So she didn't want to leave him and go to the United States and be separated again. They didn't know that Hitler was going to come and make an end to all of them. And then they killed all the Jewish people in the town. Nobody was left. One young fellow was in there lying because they shot them. They had to all undress. They stayed around a big pit in a forest, and they shot them, and they were all crying and screaming. The people heard, but nobody came to help.
You're talking about World War II now.
World War II. So that's the only young boy, 15 years old. He came out after it got dark, and he was laying with the corpses, and it was full of blood, and he was still alive, and all the other, because the bullet didn't hit him. So he crawled out, and he walked until he saw a light, and he knocked on the door, and he went in there, and when they saw him, they got scared. How he looked, and they, I suppose, gave him a chance to wash around and give him something to eat and told him to leave because they'll kill him. This was at the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And he came after the war, and somehow, I don't know how he was saved, but he's in Israel now too. And he wrote in the newspapers, and that's how I found out. And I have two sisters who left for Israel just the last boat before the Hitler came in. And they saved themselves, and they live in Israel, and they know this young man. I don't know if he's still alive, I didn't even ask, but he wrote them, and they wrote a book about what happened to our people in Katyn's Barez.
Well, let's go back to your childhood. Your grandparents, were they from that same area?
Sure. My aunts and uncles, we had about maybe 60 people that lived in the same town near each other.
And, yeah. And you went to school?
I went to school there. And
was there a temple? Did you have?
There were old-fashioned little synagogues.
Little wooden ones?
Yeah.
Wooden synagogue. Can you remember that? Can you describe it? Okay, I think it's working again. Okay, I'm sorry. We were talking about the temple.
Sure. On my block, there was one, and it was burned during the First World War. And when my grandfather died, they made a memorial before his burial on that broken, on that, the whatever it's left over after a fire. And that they put down the coffin, and there they made the memorial that whoever, the whole town came to that.
Were they mostly Jewish people in this town, or were
they? No, there were. The Gentile people lived at the outskirts. They had fields. They worked on their fields. They had homes. They lived several miles. They have town all around, and some lived in town too.
And what were the relations, generally speaking, like?
Not bad, not bad. We lived pretty good. I mean, you know, when there was a holiday and they like Christmas, we were afraid that they shouldn't come because they made pogroms. You know about it. You know about it.
Did you ever see that?
I didn't see a pogrom, but we were very scared to go outside. We were in the house and we put the shutters down and locked the doors, and that's all.
What did your father do for work?
My father also worked with in that store. See, my grandparents had that store, and it goes over from generation to generation. So we all hardly made a living. It was difficult. My mother used to go to, and during the war, my father was taking slave labor even then, and he worked on a railroad because they had out of town there was a small railroad that was going to the bigger cities, and I lived and my father worked there.
Now, when you say they took him for slave labor, what, the government?
During the war, during the First World War, whoever was there.
They took
him. They had to fix it, they had to do something, so they took the men for slave labor.
So, were you in school, when you were in school, your school was disrupted during World War One, or were you able to keep going?
During the war, nobody went out any place, but as soon as it settled, we went back to school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they fixed it there. It was near the cemetery, the school. It was a piece of land, so they built up from woods, from boards, made a school, and that's where we went.
And was it a school where there were Polish children as well?
No, only a Jewish school.
Oh.
And there was a Polish school too, all the way down in my block, because there was a church all the way down on the outskirts, a church and somebody, a rich owner that owned property, a gentleman, had and a forest. He owned a lot of land, so. That's where the church was, and near was a school, a Polish school or a Russian school, or whatever they taught there. So I went to that too, but I didn't go too much because they kept on fighting. And in 1923, it ended 1918, and then I started in the Jewish school, and I learned that. And then in 23, I came here, and I had to go to school here until I was able. I was a minor yet. Because I had nobody to support me. my aunt and uncle didn't have, and they wanted that. And when I came in Ellis Island, they were going to send me back. But first of all, because I'm a minor and I wasn't supposed to come here by myself. But somehow I didn't know any better because I was supposed to come with my aunt. And my aunt didn't want to leave her husband. So I came by myself. I didn't want to lose the passport because it's costly at that time. Every penny was costly.
Well, when you found out that your aunt wasn't going to go and you had to go by yourself, what did you think? Or how did you feel?
I wanted to go because that was the greatest thing. I didn't want to leave the family, of course. I was very upset about that. But they said, I'll come and I'll study. I had so much hope. And I'll become somebody and I'll send for them. And this was my the reason why I went. And I said, I'll suffer for a while, but they'll all come and we'll be together. But when we had already, when I worked and I already tried to make papers to send to my, at least for one sister to come, the next one to me, it was too late. It was already, the ambassador, the Polish ambassador said that we can't do anything because there was going to be Hitler's start of the war. And that was too late already for all of them.
Do you remember leaving your home?
Yes.
What was that like?
It was very sad. I was, you know, I didn't travel any place. I didn't know. I felt so lonely. And every time I ran away, and I'd like in another room or so and cried. And my parents too, they all liked it. It was very sad. We took a picture with all my friends and my sister. My sister, my two sisters, I have the pictures. If I would know you more, then I would have prepared more because I have pictures that we took it there with my friends and they're all gone, overkilled.
Wow.
And
so when you left, did people come over to say goodbye?
Yeah, not too many. They all were depressed because it was a terrible time. There was nothing to eat. It was like I remember during the war, we had potatoes. My mother went to dig potatoes for someone that had a field of potatoes, and they gave for that, they paid her with a sack of potatoes or whatever she was able to carry. And we cooked, we had no salt, we had no milk, we had no bread. It was a terrible time.
So how did you travel from your little town to the port?
I came to Warsaw. Warsaw was Warsaw was a big city, everybody knew, even now.
How did you get there?
An uncle of mine, who was traveling most of the time to get stuff for the store, mm-hmm. knew, was acquainted. So he took me there, and then he brought me over to the place where I was supposed to get the... it was Germany, I forgot the town, where I was supposed to take a small boat to Southampton. I forgot that it was a port.
Bremen? Was it Bremen?
Bremen, there was another German town, German. And you know, and someone came over and said, oh, you're going on the boat, you wouldn't have what to eat. If you have $10, I'll go and buy for you. I don't know how much it said. I didn't have that much money. I had to have $25 to show when I came here. And I had some Russian money, Polish money. And he says, I'll bring you something, a salami and bread, so you'll have what to eat. I was so naive. So I gave him the money and then waited and never came. And I didn't have the food. But the food wasn't so much. Yeah, so when my uncle brought me over there and all the people were sitting with a valise or a package with a bundle to go, to board a small boat. It was a small boat to England from Germany. So my uncle said to her, a younger woman with a little boy, maybe 7, 8 years. So she says, you're going to New York too? She says, yeah, my husband is in New York and he's going to meet me in Ellis Island and he's going to take me off the boat. And I haven't seen him for so many years. He left before. And he said, what is your name? And I heard, I don't remember, Cohen or something else. I remember the name to say when they told me, with whom are you traveling? I said, with Mrs. Cohen. So they put her down and she was next to me waiting for Nick. After I thought she didn't say anything. If she would said no, she's not, she's just sitting, I wouldn't have been here. I wouldn't have been alive already. Oh, for a long time. I would have been where my whole family is. She didn't say anything. But after, she says, why did you say that? In case you're sick or something happens and they stop you from going, they'll stop me too. And they say, I'm responsible for you. I said, you'll see, I'll be all right. I'll be fine and you'll be fine. I'll help you. And you know, it was like that. It was a smoke boat and it was rocking from one side to the other, very old. And there was, and everybody got sick. They were throwing up. Two women from Riga, two young girls, and myself were the only people that went every morning for breakfast. The tables were set, and nobody else. And she couldn't get off the bed, and I got a nap for her, and I got water for her, and I got things she threw up, and I cleaned for her. And then I said, did I tell you that? I don't know. I didn't think I can, I was so smart. So I said to her, just remember I said, I'll help you. And I helped, and I did more than I could because I wanted to show her that she did me the favor. How do you like that? And when I came in Ellis Island, my aunt came to see me. I don't know, they called my name. I go out, I look down, more people, I don't know where. I didn't recognize. I went in again. Then again they called out. Then I standing looking. Then I see a woman is walking toward me. And she told me, it called out my name. And that was my aunt.
And she said, you never saw your aunt? Or did you know your aunt?
I've seen her when I was very young. She came here many years ago. And she went to see her husband's family in Russia. So she stopped off to see her father, her mother was gone at that time, and her sister and the brothers. And that's when I saw her, but that was so many years. And she brought me two little dresses and for my sister, to the same, from when she came back from Odessa in Russia. Oh, I never had anything like this. I thought it was the greatest. We put on the dress and walked out. Everybody looked at us. We never had that. You know, but what we wore, we used to take the sheets from the soldiers, gave away old sheets, whatever, and they cut it, they dyed it. My mother used to dye it and made the dresses by hand. That's what we wore. And I told you, I bought a pair of new shoes to go with clothes. I bought a house dress, a plain house dress, that I would wear it in the house. But for me, it was new. So, and that's the reason I wanted to come to the United States, to better myself. And what about all the immigrants? Didn't they come for that reason? That's some people did. Some people became millionaires. I just watched how New York was built. Maybe you saw it just
yesterday.
How did you like
I
that?
Loved it.
How the bridge, Brooklyn Bridge. I knew Brooklyn Bridge very well because I used to go over there from Brooklyn to New York. And how all the towers, the highest buildings, the Empire State Building was built. And all the things that, how it's so familiar to me. And Harlem, I was in Harlem in 1923 when I came. And another thing, in Harlem,
uh-huh.
In you know what else happened to me in Ellis Island?
What?
I didn't have, I had a little valise that was, I didn't have the clothes to put in. But my mother gave me along a pillow and a cover from feathers. And also, that's what they gave me a present, a going away present. And dried mushrooms. That was a big deal, right? In Europe, it took the place of meat because my mother used to go to the forest with other people. My mother was very young. And pick the mushrooms because it was there. And then they dried it and somehow, and that was, they figured in America they don't have it, it'll be a big deal. So she worked on it and made and bought some, I don't know how, and made a package like this. I was able to carry it and put it into a sack and sewed it around to make it, and put around a cord. And I carried this and I've had the little valise. I come to Ellis Island and the package is standing, that's how I brought it. But when I had to go up on the Bering area, I took it on the Bering area, that was fine too. But when I came to Ellis Island, what do you call the men that when you come, he looks up, he looks over your baggage?
Inspector?
Inspector. The inspector came over and says, what have you got there? And I was in line to, because my uncle was supposed to come to take me off the boat. That was after I stayed 2 weeks already, and they put in a, they gave to the government, to the city, a $500 bond that they wouldn't have to support me. They'll get the money back when I'll give the, my uncle laid out the money. So I had to pay my uncle the money, the $500. Anyway, so I had to pay the government, so the government gave my uncle back. It doesn't matter whom I paid, either my uncle got it, or this, I don't remember anymore. But, so the man, the inspector says, what have you got there? I said, I got a pillow, I've got a cover, like a quilt, from feathers, and I've got the dry mushrooms. Touches, it's hard, it's very hard. It was like this, a package like, he says, no, you have a samovar. You know what a samovar is? You should know. No, we never had a samovar. He says, he tried and it touched and it turned. And I said, you have to open up the... I says, how can I open up? It's all sewed around. How am I going to close it? I have no cord. I have no cotton. What am I going to do? He says, then you can go out. I was crying again. What shall I do? How am I going to make the package? I know. He says, no. It's a samovar, you're lying. I says, I swear to you, I never, we didn't have a samovar. He made me so upset. I says, I'll tell you. Open up. But you'll have to close it because I can't do that. I have nothing. I haven't got a cord to tie it up again. How am I going to go? I have to go. My uncle's going to come to take me home. He opened it up and he saw. I'll tell you, I wished him the worst because if he can do that, I swore to him. He sees a kid, poor. I looked awful. I can imagine how I looked. He made me so upset. then my uncle came.
So was he able to put it back together?
He took a cord and tied it around it. That's as long as it didn't fall apart. I was able to take that stuff. My uncle came, and it took me on the train, and it was everything I walked out. I didn't know where to look first. When the boat came to take me off Ellis Island, and it was, and when the past the Statue of Liberty, everybody didn't sleep. We were all on the boat to see how exciting.
So can you remember some, besides the statue, other things that you saw that were so new to
the
you?
The lights, the buildings, the subways. I haven't seen anything like that. And my aunt lived, I told you, Harlem is the before Manhattan, but that's the settled people lived in Manhattan, it's my lot of business. But it's a big town. New York is a big city, and they have a lot of boroughs. Yeah. So when I came, I went on the train. I saw people sitting out there dressed. Everything was new to me. And then my aunt lived on the third floor on 114th Street near Lenox Avenue. Do you know any?
Yeah,
you familiar?
I work in Harlem.
Between Lenox and Fifth, on a third floor. That was, I thought the higher the floor, the more expensive it is. So I figured, oh, you must be rich people. And of course, she had dinner. She was a young woman, my aunt. And she had a little girl, a year old. And when the girl started to talk, I spoke to her English. That's I still don't talk well. But that's how I lived there. Then they moved out again, and then they moved to Brooklyn, and I moved with them to Brooklyn.
Did you go to school right
I went. Yes.
In Harlem?
I even went to school, 116th Street in New Lenox, between Lenox and Fifth. There's a public school. I came in May, and I went to summer school immediately. And I went in a class where they taught for foreigners. But I knew arithmetic, I knew to write, I knew a little Russian, a little Polish. And I walked, wherever I walked, I took the train, I took the subway, I went to my other, I had another end. I mean, everything was very exciting. And I used to write home a postcard every week and told them all the things. And my uncle took me one time to a show in New York on 42nd Street, whatever. So I don't know. I met a little girl across the street, and I was glad to have somebody to talk to. Also came from Europe. So we became friends. But she came, she had a stepfather, and she had a mother, and she had two sisters. I didn't have anybody. So I saw a teacher, and she went to the same school too. So I used to go in there, and it was, we talked Jewish, and we tried to talk English a little. And I took care of my, and I went to school. So it wasn't easy, because my ancestors, she wasn't so handy. And then she had another child, and she had a child. I had to stop from the school, take off, and take care of the baby, the older one. And she had two boarders that time.
What was that like, having the boarders in the house?
Two boarders, a man right near the door. As you walk in, there was a little hall. A man lived in a room. And a girl lives in the bathroom, near the bathroom, where in the kitchen, from the kitchen, you go into her room. Two boarders, and I had to clean the whole house. But I took everything. But you know what? One thing, my other aunt, who lived in the Bronx, And when she put in the quarter in the meter for the gas, she had to cook or bake. She was to bake and cook. She had to three children. So she had to put a quarter in the meter. That was everything. Everything was new to me. And
were you happy when you got here? Were you homesick? Were you glad you had come?
I was homesick. Oh, I had a cousin. I got in touch with a cousin who lived downtown, Lower East Side. And I knew my cousins, because one was a little older than me and one was older. She had already a boyfriend, and he was left because she came before to her father. Her father was in America, and they lived there. But the bathroom was in the hall for all the tenants. And the Chinese, and her bedroom, and I used to sleep over there. So there was like a hall, you know, a three-story building. And this was the windows from the Chinese. This was the building from us, the windows. And we saw each other at night. You make a light, you see everybody in bed, everybody sleeping, everybody talking. It was scary too. I thought they couldn't move over, and they can come into our room. I was scared. I was scary. And what else?
Were you happy you were there, even though you were homesick?
No, I wasn't happy to be with my aunt, because there was nothing for me to do. So I used to do all the work, come from school and clean and do the homework. And Friday, I did the shopping already. My uncle had a grocery store, 113, just stopped off and bought whatever my aunt needed, brought it upstairs, and take the subway and go to the Bronx. There, my aunt and the children went to a park. It was summer, went out, and sometimes she went with me because her little girl was very little, and I was already big, so she used to take me for ice cream in the ice cream parlor and talk to me and show me all the window stores, so many stores and so many windows, so many things that's available. And she made me a dress, and she sold too. And my other aunt made me a dress. I didn't have, that's how I learned how to work, not from them, but I figured if I'll get older, I'm going to learn how to sew. When things are bad, you make your own clothes, because material, you'll get pieces, remnants, and you can do so. And I did that. And I went through a depression in 1930. The depression here, it was awful. It was, you know.
Were you finished being in school by the time the depression came? Were you out of school by then?
The 1929?
Of course.
So I was married by then.
Oh, you were married. What did you do when you stopped going? When did you stop going to school?
Oh, I finished public school, and I started junior high. And my aunt said, "We can't support you. You have to go to work." I didn't know what to do. I thought if I have another chance, I would become a typist. A typist, a stenographer, I would work in an office. So my aunt says, no. So what? She says, I'll take you up to a place, to a factory, where they teach you how to sew an electric machine. And from that, you'll make a living. So when she came to school to tell the teacher that she wants me to go out to give up school, they were so shocked. I remember the time that they said, though, they took her outside and they spoke to her, and they went in. They said, well, that's your decision, but that's not the right thing to do. So I figured, I'll learn how to sew, I'll go to work, and I'll go to school at night. So I went and I registered, And she saw my report card. I had a very good report card because I studied day and night. I wanted to get finished and to become something, to send money to my family. So I finished. So I registered, and she praised me. And she says, I wish I had many students like you with such a report card. And I come to my aunt in the Bronx, and I told her what I did. She says, that's the one that took me out. She's gone already. But she says, you know, that wouldn't be good. You have to work. And you work, you don't go to school. And that's how you'll work up. And if you want to stay with me until you work up, you can do that. But I want you to stay with the kids at night. To babysit. That I felt very bad. I told my friend, and I cried, and I figured, and I told my other aunt and uncle. And I told them what happened, and I can't go to school. He says, I don't know about school, but you know what? You stay with me. Now listen, I helped them too. You stay with me, and when you'll and work, you can't go to school. It's no good. You stopped already. It's no good. But I wouldn't charge you for that. So you'll save up the money. You'll pay me the $500. And I wanted to send, and I sent some money to I didn't make the beginning. I worked, but that wasn't good. The second time I learned on the machine. The first time, she took me in the Bronx to a hat store, and they taught me how to trim hats.
But that was your
paid
first job?
The first job. But they paid me $5 a week. And that was the market. I couldn't get any place. So I left that and I went to the factory. And that, at first, I didn't make much. But then I started to work piecework, ladies' underwear. And that made it better. $30, $35. So I paid off. And I helped my family. And that's how I lived. And I worked all this time until I met my husband.
And how did you meet him?
How I met him? I went to Brownsville, you know Brownsville?
In Brooklyn.
That was the poorest neighborhood there was. My friend who lived across the street from me in Europe lived there. And I had her address. And I got in touch with her. They were so poor. You know what her father did? He used to go around and buy rags. Oh, not buy, ask them to give him rags and sell rags. And they lived in such a poor neighborhood. And I used to say, they didn't let me go home. I used to go there for the weekend. I used to go there when I went to work. I came home, I worked already. And Friday, I walked from Eastern Parkway, Brooklyn, to Brownsville. And there I stayed over. We used to go to Coney Island with young kids. And Coney Island, they have the rides, and they have the Frankfurter. And it was a new world for me, opened up. And that's where I met the girls, and they knew some boys, and that's how we got acquainted, and that's how I met my husband in Brownsville too. Wow.
Can you say any more about Coney Island in those days when you first
Coney Island was such a... Who didn't go to Coney Island? Whoever came to the United States, to Coney Island was something. We used to go, when my children were little, I used to take them on a Saturday or Sunday, take them in the carriage and go there and take food along. and we'd have lunch and we'd have dinner and we'd bathe, we'd be in the water and then come home at night. That was the greatest thing. Coney Island, every Saturday we went, or Sunday we went to Coney Island.
And what was your husband's name?
Ben.
Ben. Uh-huh. Yeah. And you had children?
I have two daughters.
And their names?
Norma Prensing.
Uh-huh. So when after you got married, did you work?
You know, my father-in-law was so old-fashioned. I said, I'm going to work. He said, who heard of that? Only Italian women got to work. Nobody else goes to work. And he was a plumber. And we thought he'll make a living because he went through and he got to the studied for it. And it started at $60 a week. And that would be fine. Who should know that they stop building the building, finish a building, that's it. You have no work? You can go to work the same day, and they say it's all finished, they don't need you. You put in the plumbing, they don't need you, you're finished. So it wasn't a steady job. If you worked a couple of months, we caught up a little, but it was very hard to live like that. We had no checkbook, we had no account, we had no money, we had nothing. And it was suffering, terrible in the United States. But you know, it made me very strong and it learned me how to live carefully. I'll tell you, not everything is bad. They say God gives you according to time. It gave me a bad time, but it gave me strength and gave me to learn how to live. That time when you buy 3 eggs and a half of bread, and that's it, and you can't afford to buy, you have no money to buy anything else in the United States.
Well, this was the Depression time.
Depression. Nothing. Thousands of people came to shovel the snow, and you couldn't get a job even that to do. There was no break. It was a terrible, terrible time. Mm.
And then what? When World War II started coming, was your husband?
My husband worked for his brother because he couldn't make out during the war. They stopped building. He tried, he went to South Carolina, he went to Washington where they made for the soldiers barracks. But that was it. He got himself bleeding ulcers and he got sick and he was so sick. The doctor says, he smoked too. And you know, you go into a town, first of all, you don't want to spend too much. And secondly, you want to make a meal from a little nothing. And they didn't agree with him. He had to be very careful because when he came home, he couldn't work for a while. And it was bad. And then his brothers went into zipper business and they said to him, if we'll make, you'll make too. And if we'll go broke, you wouldn't have anything either. But they really made. They made and he didn't. He didn't belong to a union. He didn't have anything, security. He had nothing. And when he was 65 years, they didn't need him anymore. So he said to my sister-in-law, whom he introduced my brother-in-law to this woman, the young woman, said to me, my father said, my husband says, you know, I finished up 65 to the day. Now, can you give me at least a couple of days a week and pay me the same amount you pay all the workers that just come into work, money that you are allowed to pay, I forgot what you call that.
Minimum wage.
So she says, I'll tell you, my father wants to work for nothing, we don't need him either. And that was the end. I'm still friendly with her. Her husband is Alzheimer. He was good, but she wore the pins, and whatever she said went. And she knows I always, because I talk when I have to say it sometimes to her, and she knows it. And it bothers me, because he wanted to make the few days, and she wouldn't give it. And that's it.
What would you say were your greatest satisfactions in your life?
Satisfaction. I don't know what I'll tell you. It wasn't as good as I thought. I was disappointed when I was young. I thought at least I'll go to school, I'll better myself. Satisfaction. The children were born. It was a tough time. Mm-hmm. Rough. Mm-hmm. In fact, I wanted to go for an abortion. The second one. It was 3 years later. And I went to the doctor. And I didn't care. So he says, you have to pay me that much. I don't remember how much. I says, I don't have any. He says, and I can't do it. So I went back. Maybe I need to, I don't know. What can I tell you? I belong to an organization for 60 years. Maybe that is my satisfaction. It gave me a lot of satisfaction.
Which organization?
This was before Israel became a state. I know they had the organization 10 years before I thought of it. And we had clubs all over. New York, all over the United States. And Golda Meir, who was the Prime Minister of Israel, she was at that time the secretary of our organization. And everybody respected her. And I didn't belong, I was very young then. It was in 1935. They were organized in 1925, and we made a group in Brooklyn, in Bensonhurst, in 1935. And I was young, I had small children. And some people were younger yet, and they gave birth at the time they joined first, and then. And we had this club for 55 years.
And
we said like this, we had a speaker to come and speak to us. So she came to my cousin's house. I mean, we knew about it, we went to other clubs. I knew, but I couldn't grasp it. I had problem with money, with all that. An organization, you know, you have to work, you have to have older children to give you a chance, and then you have to work yourself too, so when can you go? But this young woman came to my cousin's house, I remember it as if it's today, that was 65 years ago. And she said, she comes from Israel. And she told us what the money goes for. It started in 25 because they needed a well first to water the saplings so they can have something to, they can plant potatoes and vegetables and have what to eat. Because the people that came there to Israel, the young, educated people from Russia, they were very educated, college graduate, they said that the Jewish people must have a piece of land of their own, to call their own homeland. And they came and they are struggling so, and they have no water. The problem, it's still the same problem, and who knows if it'll ever settle. And there were a few well-known people in New York, educated also from Russia, and they made an appeal, and they spoke, and they organized, and they sent the $500, they needed $500 for the well. And then Golda Meir came and started to talk, that wouldn't help enough. We need to give them more help to do, to plant, to buy land. They say the Arabs, everything belongs to them. They bought, we here raised the money and they bought land and they planted. And were you ever in Israel?
No.
When you see what they did, I was there in 1959, and because my two sisters were saved from Hitler and they came there and they still live there. So you see, when the, where the, you can tell the difference where they are. Well, at the beginning you couldn't tell. I said they'll never be able to have anything there because they had only dunes of sand and stones. Nothing, not a little tree, not a flower, nothing. Mountains of sand. How do you build? How do you plant? What do you do with that? It was impossible. I couldn't believe that something. But a couple of years later when I came, I saw, and now they made, now I spoke to my sister, they opened up now a store, like a department store. It must be a flea market too, I don't know. She says it's so beautiful that it is nicer than the nicest in the United States. People make money. There are always rich people and poor people. But the rich people invest, and there it's cheaper to invest because land was cheaper. And somehow they did great. It is like a Garden of Eden there.
Did you get so much satisfaction out of being in that organization?
You know, I wanted to be something. I wanted to do something. I wanted to do something for my people too, and for myself. I felt that I became the first secretary. We had no president, and I became a membership chairman. Everything with two small children, a baby in a carriage, and I accepted it, and I went to hear, listen to speakers at night, 8 o'clock at night. A few women used to get together, take the subway, go to New York, and listen to the speakers. We had the greatest. And every speaker, everything I wrote down, and I came and I gave them a report, and I became a big shot. I went to a convention, I brought a report. Sometimes I didn't believe it, I did it myself. If I didn't like it, I rewrote it. And I didn't sleep much. I sewed and I baked. I had no refrigerator, I had no washing machine, I had nothing. And I worked at night, and I washed at night, and I ironed at night. And I went to meetings. And every place they needed, I was there. I ran around looking for old stuff. What did the people give you? Especially, you don't know rich people, you only know poor people. So whatever it's old, they can't wear, they give it away. And we sold it, a quarter a dress, 10 cents, whatever. That's hard work. I gave for myself. I couldn't give money, but that's what I gave. Day and night I was busy. Day and night, I'm writing. And it was difficult for me. It was so difficult for me to write reports. I wrote it and rewrote it. And then if I had somebody to listen to it, to tell me whether I did it the right way, whether I made the right choice. I went to Israel the first time, and one of the women who was very active, and she had a little business, she sold things, the homes, so she was, and she had no children. She was able to give more money, and she did good, and everybody knew her and all that. So I met her there. And she comes over to me, and she says, you know what? And she used to sell a lot of things from Israel. She had a sister there. She says, you know what? I have some things. Maybe you can take it. Being you're not taking much, you didn't bring much. I brought some old stuff. I got from the family. I got clothes from my sisters. I didn't come empty-handed. Coffee was expensive. Sugar, whatever I brought there. I took a big, big carton and I made a big package and I brought to my family. that. So she comes and brings me a package. What did she have? And my sister says, how are you going to drag it? That's very heavy. You can't even... She bought things to sell, so she brings it over to me. And what would happen if David, the inspector, you have to tell what you're bringing? Mm-hmm. I would be in trouble. So my sister says, I wouldn't let you take it, call her up, and tell her to come and take it back. You cannot do it. She was angry at me, but she came and took it back because I saw my sister's right. They're too good natured. And the satisfaction is that I was there for 60 years. I have what people wrote about. We celebrated our 60th anniversary when we left for Florida.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I have poems. I have things. I have papers. I have what they wrote and what they said and things. But... I'm not in the mood now. But it gave me so much satisfaction when we had an appeal, a fundraising. You need it. We had it at the beginning. We cooked and we baked and we got around to look for people. And if it made $10, it was good. But later on, we made $1,200 and we made more. And we had a quarter of $1,500. And we did well. People gave, and this gave me the greatest satisfaction, and it enriched my life by belonging to this organization.
What's the name of the organization?
It used to be Pioneer Women.
And now?
And now it's a name, it's called NAMAT, Working Women and Volunteers. Uh-huh. And they are volunteers. And I have, you will like it. I have a journal that I get it once in a couple of months. We used to get it every month. But the organization is not doing as well because the older generation is gone. Would you believe it? But the original founders of Bensonhurst Club Pioneer Women, I'm the only one left over, the original founders. All the founders that were about 8 are gone. And all the members, and the club isn't here anymore, but there are others. There are some maybe younger, some started later, but that's it for so many years.
Okay,
I'll give you this.
Okay.
You'll enjoy it. And if you like it, you can always get you right there. There's the national, right. The national office is in New York.
Okay. I want to close here with the end of the tape, and I want to thank you for a wonderful.
You'll redo whatever I said. You write whatever. You heard what I told you.
Yes.
You mean you
it's
covered
on the
it?
Tape, and I'm going to give you a tape.
I don't know how good goes. I don't know if
okay.
I spoke so good.
I didn't even
know you're taking it now.
Okay. Let me just close off. I've been speaking with Ruth Epstein Greenstein, who came from Poland in 1923 when she was 15 years old and is 91 on the time of this interview. And this is Janet Levine signing off.